The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Ukraine's second largest city has come under heavy bombardment from Russia.
Kharkiv now is upside down.
Before the war, this was a big city with a lot of people in the streets, a lot of cars in the streets, traffic. And now this is like a ghost city.
But residents are fighting back. We'll have more from on the ground. And the U.S. and the EU are tightening the screws on Russia's economy, what the new measures target. Plus, where springing ahead can lead to even more headaches. It's Friday, March 11th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. President Biden wants to sever normal trade ties with Russia as the West escalates pressure to punish Moscow for its invasion of Ukraine. That would include banning imports of Russian seafood, vodka, and diamonds. Speaking at the White House today, Biden said the move will be, quote, another crushing blow to the Russian economy.
The United States and our allies and partners continue to work in lockstep to ramp up the economic pressures on Putin and to further isolate Russia in the global stage.
Congress is expected to vote next week on legislation to remove Russia from normal trade relations. Meanwhile, as we previewed this morning, the European Union has outlined additional sanctions it plans to impose on Russia in the next few days. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says they include revoking Russia's benefits as a member of the World Trade Organization and banning EU exports of luxury goods to Russia. She said the EU would also bar imports of goods in the iron and steel sector. The announcement comes after an agreement by the group of seven industrialized nations in Versailles to ramp up economic pressure on Russia. U.S. stocks opened higher today after Russian President Vladimir Putin said in televised remarks that there'd been positive developments during talks with Ukraine. But Russian forces continue to attack Ukrainian cities, and stocks turned lower this afternoon, ultimately ending the day with losses. For the week, the Dow was down 2%, its fifth straight weekly loss, while the S&P 500 fell 2.9% and the Nasdaq dropped 3.5%. A new Wall Street Journal poll finds President Biden and Democrats losing ground with voters on key issues. The survey, taken after the president's State of the Union address, finds that just 42% say they approve of Biden's performance, with 57% disapproving. That's virtually unchanged since November, despite Biden getting favorable marks for his response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Our polling editor, Aaron Zittner, says voters have other concerns heading into the midterms.
When it comes to the issues that people care about most, they don't think the president and his party are doing a great job, namely the economy and inflation. President Biden's ratings are underwater by 30 percentage points on inflation. 63% of people think he's not doing a good job in inflation, and very few think he's doing a good job. And he's underwater by 20 points. You know, disapproval outranks approval by 20 points on his handling of the economy. Democrats still are seen as the party that's best on COVID and on healthcare prices and bringing down drug prices, but those are not the top issues on their minds. In our survey, only 5% of people rated COVID as the most important issue facing the country. 50% named the economy and inflation by far the highest share of any issue in the poll.
The poll also finds that if the midterms were held today, 46% of voters say they'd support a Republican candidate for Congress, compared to 41% who favor a Democrat. Coming up, in the besieged Ukrainian city of Kharkiv, residents are bracing for what's next. We'll have more from on the ground after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
It's been more than 2 weeks since Russia invaded Ukraine, attacking cities across the country. Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city, just 20 miles from the Russian border, has been bombarded with shelling and airstrikes that have killed hundreds of people. Pavel Dorogoy was born and raised there.
Kharkiv now is upside down.
Before the war, this was a big city with a lot of people in the streets, a lot of cars in the streets, traffic. And now this is like a ghost city.
Some residents are sheltering underground, others are cleaning up the wreckage, and some are taking up arms. Our chief foreign affairs correspondent, Yaroslav Trofimov, has been reporting in Kharkiv, and he joins me now. Hi, Yaroslav. Thank you for being here today.
Great to be on the show.
Tell us a little bit about Kharkiv and what this city was like prior to the invasion.
Kharkiv is Ukraine's second largest city. It was a bustling city full of, you know, students, entrepreneurs. It was quite prosperous, fancy shopping malls, restaurants. It was just a large European city as one would imagine it. Full of life, museums, an opera, theaters, a zoo, just like any other major European city.
Now, you've been reporting from Kharkiv. Tell us what you saw and experienced on the ground there.
Well, it's really dead now. You can hardly see anyone on the above ground because of continuing Russian airstrikes and artillery strikes. People cannot be found underground in the subway stations where they have been living for 2 weeks now. The municipality has set up food stations there. They have set up toilets. And people literally are camping out underground, deep underground, because they're afraid of the Russian airstrikes that keep killing the residents of Kharkiv every day.
What have you heard from the people who are staying about how they're surviving right now in this city?
Well, a lot of people are staying because they really want to stay and because they need it. So, you have the doctors and the nurses in the hospital who are staying, and they haven't left the hospital for 2 weeks. They came there in the morning of February 24th when the war started, and they've been going ever since, taking care of the injured and the dying. You have the emergency services that are sort of trying to clear the rubble and rescue people under the rubble of buildings. You have people who supply the city with food, with electricity, the police, and obviously the soldiers and the defenders of the city, many of whom are not professional soldiers, but members of the new territorial defense forces, volunteers who have been issued guns and who are fighting to protect their own homes. So all the people are staying there, and the municipality is trying to organize some sort of semblance of normal life. So, you have crews cleaning up the streets, restoring electricity to buildings after substations are knocked out by Russian airstrikes.
Yaroslav, tell us some more about some of the people you spoke with.
It was really heartbreaking to go to a hospital today in Kharkiv. We went to the ward where they keep children who were injured by the Russians. And one of them was a little boy. He's just 7 years old. So he was riding in the car, and his mother was killed in the crossfire. He survived with horrific injuries. And his father was out of the country at the time. He was, an executive working on a project in Uzbekistan. So he flew back to Ukraine to take care of his son in the hospital ward. And he didn't want the son to hear our conversation because he said, I don't know if he knows that his mama is dead, but he keeps asking for her all the time.
I can't imagine the difficulty of having to speak with him under those circumstances.
Yeah. But this sort of conversation happened all the time. People have lost so much.
Yaroslav, what can you tell us about the way in which Russia has launched its attacks in Kharkiv? What can they tell us about Russia's strategy right now on the ground and whether it has shifted?
Well, initially, Russia must have thought that it would have a very easy time in Kharkiv. Kharkiv is a city where almost everyone speaks Russian at home. It's a city that lies only 20 miles from the Russian border, and almost every family has connections across the border. And back, in the past, there used to be a lot of pro-Russian sentiment in Kharkiv. In 2014, when protests in Kiev, the Ukrainian capital, ousted the pro-Russian president, Viktor Yanukovych, a lot of people in Kharkiv were not supporting that. And there was even a movement at the time to break away from Ukraine that had a degree of support in the city. All that is gone now. Everyone who used to be pro-Russian now viscerally hates Russia because, Russia is destroying their city. Russia is employing this strategy of mass annihilation, if you will, of the city's historical heritage. And that is new. So what happened in the beginning is that Russia attempted to penetrate the city with light infantry forces, thinking that the population will switch sides and welcome them with flowers. That didn't happen. And so after that didn't happen, after all those Russian forces that entered Kharkiv were destroyed within hours, and after Russia failed to pierce the city's military defenses, then they just started pounding residential neighborhoods. They just started destroying homes, destroying the old center of Kharkiv to exact punishment on the residents of the city and to scare them into submission, which so far hasn't worked.
Something we know Russia has not anticipated was the willingness for Ukrainians to fight back. How is the morale right now for people in Kharkiv who are staying to fight?
Well, I mean, the soldiers have a high morale because the soldiers are fighting and they think that they're winning. At least they're able to hold the line and sometimes advance. They have received sophisticated new weapons from the US, Britain especially, and other countries. The soldiers we saw in Kharkiv had the British-made and law anti-tank missiles that they used quite successfully to destroy Russian tanks and infantry and armored infantry vehicles. So there is no surrender in the cards for the Ukrainians. And most people we speak to, the overwhelming majority by far, believe that Ukraine will win in the end because they don't see any other option.
Wall Street Journal Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Yaroslav Trofimov joining me from Kharkiv. Yaroslav, thank you so much for your reporting and for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
We have continuing coverage of the crisis in Ukraine on our website, wsj.com. And finally, this weekend, millions of Americans will be setting their clocks ahead an hour for daylight saving time. We all know how losing an hour can lead to missed appointments, delays, and other miscommunications. But our reporter Stephen Council says for people who live near time zone borders, the twice-a-year time switch can get especially complicated.
They're often sending extra texts to make sure, oh yes, it's on Central Time. Oh yes, we're talking about Eastern Time. They're also really used to their phones switching back and forth. Most of the people who live on time zone borders have declined the option for their phone to sync automatically with what time zone they're in and chosen to just live exclusively in either the time zone of their workplace or their home or their kids' school. In some cases, these people who live on time zone borders deal with a lot of people who don't. So a lot of tourists will come in very confused about things, and that runs all these issues with things like folks getting late to happy hour or showing up late to appointments.
To make sure you don't have any of those mishaps, don't forget to make sure your clocks move 1 hour ahead Sunday at 2 a.m. local time. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. The show was produced by Trine Nouri and Mohsen Ali, with help from Anthony Bansi and Kate Bullivant, and editorial support from Kateri Yoakum, Sandra Kilhoff, Michael Kosmides, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.